Welcome to the Dungeon Plunger Podcast. My name is Jason Weeb, and this is the show in which I, a real-life janitor and dungeon master, teaches you how to plunge in and run a better Dungeons & Dragons game. Without further ado, let's plunge into this week's episode, taking it to the next level. Welcome, Dungeon Plunger Union members, to Episode 7. What have I been up to this week? Well, I've been up to quite a bit. I have a strange thing where I have one week where I'm completely packed to the gills, proverbially speaking. I am not a deep one. I do not have gills. But yeah. So unfortunately, I was unable to do any solo play, which is kind of a bummer. But that's understandable because I had like 3 different games this week. So Monday, I had my youth group. I feel like I need to get some kind of a cool name for all these different groups because youth group sounds lame. I mean, really, they're kids to me, and I never thought that I would say this in a million years, but the fact is, I'm an old dude now, and if you're in your mid-20s, you're kind of a kid in my book. But, yeah, so my kids group, playing Shadowdark, had a little adventure where one of the group members, little gnome dude. So there's no gnomes in Shadowdark, but I created my own gnome class. And the gnome character named Norbit was approached by another gnome who's essentially their burrow has been overrun by goblin raiders who were up to no good. And so that's what they were doing. Then Wednesday, I had my Stars Without Numbers game, and we're sort of heading into the direction of kind of starting to like tie up things. We're looking at look at this as like the end of season one of the show. And so there's been a lot of talk about, you know, how are we going to end this so that it's cool and everybody has a good time and that we can kind of, you know, finish off some storylines. And so one of the storylines that we're trying to finish off is one of the players created a droid character who was basically a medical droid working for a mercenary group, and his name was Isaac. And basically, he ended up saving the group and in the process ended up dying. And because when he died, what we all agreed on that we thought would be really cool is if his CPU could be put into a new robot. But we didn't want it to just be like any robot. We wanted there to be a sort of story leading up to it. And so now the characters are basically on a mission to a place called Tech World, where they plan to figure out a way to get Isaac's body, or Isaac's, you know, soul, so to speak, put into a new droid body. So that should be pretty cool. And then once, you know, we've gotten things tied up nice and neat in the Stars Without Numbers, then we'll probably move on to playing Masks of Narlahotep. And as far as that goes, I am still plowing through the book. I finished the England chapter. It is a monster chapter in the book. It is quite large. There's like at least 2 side quests in it, but very, very good. I'm really happy with it so far. And I've started on the Egypt chapter, and then I'll be done book 1. So hopefully by the end of this week, I'll finish the first book, and then I can start on book 2. My last game was on Saturday night. This is my ladies group. And we are also playing Shadow Dark in this game. And we had finished Winter's Daughter. And so I was like, hey, you know, these old school adventure, old school essentials, sorry, adventures are pretty cool. So I busted out, they're still level one. So I was like, okay, you know, let's get something here that they would be able to like handle. So I got The Hole in the Oak, which I have to say, I really love these adventures. They're super well, they're well written. They're very nice to look at, well put together. I love the hardcover, you know, format, the little, I guess it's kind of an A5 size. And the everything about them makes them very, very usable at the table. The only thing that I really needed to do was basically just print off the map so that I could have access to look at that while I'm looking at the pages. And then also I printed off the basically the random happenings table that's also there. So those were the only two things that I really needed to have access to. But like, honestly, everything is very, it's very usable at the table. You know, like, I really like how it gives you all this information, you know, that you can use about, like, what's the rooms like, what are sounds so that you can hear, like, you know, it kind of gives you that choice, right? So, for example, like, you hear the sound of rushing water or wind, you're not really sure what it is coming from the northern passage, and from the eastern passage, you see like a green glow. So it kind of gives a sense of agency to the players that they get to make a choice that matters to a certain extent. And you know, it's not just about like what is exactly in this particular room. And I find the encounters range from like really goofy to like really good, like really serious. And so yeah, I highly recommend these. I think after The Hole in the Oak, depending on how things go, I may continue with the incandescent grottos, which apparently connects to the Hole in the Oak adventure. So we'll see. I haven't quite decided that yet, but you know, I like to think about what the players are going to do. And so yeah, that's what I've been up to. And I asked you guys last week, you know, what I should call my mailbag. And so I got a call in with a suggestion. So I say, let's hit that right now. All right.
Hey, Jason. Kyle here. You might know me better as Varger from our mutual Discord. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. I just finished your episode, Are You Talking to Me? And towards the beginning, you were looking for suggestions as to what to call your kind of your mail room section of your show. And I had the idea Mimic Mailbox, because you have Mimic Treasure Chests that try to eat you. You have Mimic Doors that try to eat you. And I'm certain that there are Mimic Mailboxes out there that try to eat you. So that's my suggestion to throw into the hat. And then also towards the end, you said, what do we think we could do to be better GMs in the way of communication? And that you just got to know your players as well as you can, maybe talk to them outside of the game, if that's possible. But really, at the end of the day, I don't think it's possible to know every possible scenario that could set somebody off. So maybe just discuss with your players beforehand and just do the best you can. But yeah, I love your show, man. Keep doing what you're doing. You're rocking it. Peace, dude.
There you have it, folks. The Mimic Mailbox. All right. So from now on, that's what we're going to call it. Thank you so much, Kyle, for your suggestion. I love it. How horrifying would that be to be a mailman in a fantasy world and be like wondering, you know, it's one thing you're afraid of dogs, but like put mail in a mailbox. Like how many mailmen would die every year? Anyway, on your other points about communicating, I 100% agree. I think, you know what, sometimes it's probably even better sometimes to take your players aside separately, you know, to have a private conversation, and then nobody feels embarrassed, and, you know, they can have their dignity, and, you know, everybody can get back to playing the game. And you're right. We can't anticipate every scenario of something that might trigger somebody. But I think that's sort of why safety tools exist, right? It's something there to basically give that escape hatch button for people to be able to say, hey, I'm feeling uncomfortable, you know, about this particular situation. So thank you very much for the compliments too, dude. I really appreciate it, and I will continue to do my best. And folks, remember, he didn't tell me this to tell you, but I'm going to say it anyway. Kyle, aka Varger, has a YouTube channel called The Rolling Solo RPG. And right now, he's got this really cool, he's got a whole whack of videos here on Krog doing a Pathfinder 2nd Edition solo RPG stuff. So I highly suggest checking it out. He also has one for Avatar Legends, which I haven't seen. Oh, he has a whole bunch of them actually here. Hold on. Yeah, so I'm just looking. Oh, yeah. So he's got a bunch of stuff for Pathfinder, for Avatar. Looks like mostly Pathfinder stuff. But I have watched the stuff on Krog, and I really enjoy watching it. So I suggest you take a look and give him a like, give him a comment. Keep that algorithm rolling. You know what I'm saying? We got to fight the algorithm, people. All right, let's move on to our next call.
Hey, Weeb, it's Jay, and I thought I would call in and thank you for episode 6. First of all, thanks for playing my call, which I always appreciate. But also thanks for the 2 thoughts that you gave me out of all of that. So you were talking about your stories of Ash-Holia, and the first one, especially, I kind of felt like wasn't really your fault. I think obviously you're reflecting on your behavior and how you reacted and all of that. I'm fully willing to accept that, you know, you feel bad about, you feel, you know, it's difficult. And I think if I'd have gone off on one, when I think about when times when I've gone off on one in the past, you know, it's extremely difficult to come back from. But I actually think that is something worth considering about the trigger and how the trigger is actually a perfectly reasonable thing to trigger you. And I think that kind of antagonistic play is actually, and the idea that a gym would be laughing at you because you made a big mistake and all that kind of stuff is something that I personally find very distasteful to you. But also later in the episode, you talked about players who try to be sneaky, as you put it, and tricky and try to catch the GM out. And it got me reflecting on that. I think there's a form of play, not GMing, playing, which is actually itself toxic and quite antagonistic. And there are far more antagonistic players than there are GMs. And I guess what I also reflected on was the stuff you were talking about regarding safety tools and such things and all of that. I was thinking to myself that on the one hand, it's really quite a barrier for me. If I start worrying about what people will think about the content of my games or the sort of things I put into them, it's quite a barrier to me. So something like the situation you described would never end up in one of my games simply because I would be worried I would trigger someone or be upsetting somebody without intending to. But also, of course, that takes away certain situations from the game and in fact, far less sensitive ones because I will tend to back away from them, assuming that people will be uncomfortable, especially if it's something I'm uncomfortable about. I think the general principle of like treating your players and offering them opportunities and things in the game, which you would yourself be comfortable with, is actually a really good principle. Treat others the way you want to be treated kind of stuff. But actually, it can be a limit. And I don't know how to push that boundary. I think maybe the best safety tool is, as you perhaps indicated, conversation with the players. Although I guess sometimes we're not even aware that something is difficult for us until we are faced with it. But I appreciate the dialogue that you've kind of initiated around that. And yeah, as always, really appreciate the episode. Hope you're well. Thanks for all you're doing. Game on.
Thanks so much for the call, Chi. I really appreciate it. These are the kind of calls that I was really hoping I was going to get. The kind of calls where created an open dialogue about the subject. Other people can give their opinions and thoughts because I'm not an expert. I can only go by my experiences, what's worked for me, what I've seen other people do at other tables. But ultimately, I think we're such a diverse lot that I think everybody has something that they can offer. And I feel really blessed to be around people like yourself who are deep thinkers and are able to not only validate my experiences, but also offer some of their own thoughts. And I agree, I never really considered toxic players beyond the rule lawyer. But yeah, I do think that, you know, often it is the game master that sort of, you know, we hear the stories about the bad game masters. And is that really fair? I feel like as a game master, we have so much stuff put on our plate in terms of like organizing the game, learning the rules of the game, prepping the sessions for the game, wrangling the people around the table to like pay attention and maintaining that story continuity and so many different elements. I mean, in some cases, maybe it's even ordering the pizza, providing the place to play and scheduling the next sessions, and the list goes on. Thanks for your really thoughtful reply. And, you know, I when I consider about the situation that I described with the antagonistic GM, you know, in a lot of respects, I was young, and so I was immature and not able to handle myself. I think in the same situation, that game master was also young and, you know, had his own struggles to deal with. And I think that's the other issue, right? Is that we all are dealing with different things at different times. And so I think we all need to be gentle with one another. But thanks again for the call, dude. And hopefully I can inspire you to call in again. So we're on a roll here. All right, Che. Peace. So let's get our last caller. We got a super mega long one here from Barry. If it's not Scottish, it's crap. From A Song of Dice and Shadows. So let's hear what Barry has to say.
Hey Weeb, it's Barry here from A Song of Dice and Shadows, just calling in, having listened to your rules episode. I guess the main reason I'm calling in is to kind of mostly agree with what you said, to be honest, which obviously makes sense because you clearly know everything that you're talking about. And also, to disagree slightly, which was around about, even if the rules is fairly, or the game is fairly rules heavy, I think at some point you still need to throw yourself into it. And I guess the example I'm going to give is that I put off playing GURPS for a very, very long time because, you know, the GURPS rule set being what it is. And actually, in the end, I just thought, bugger it, I'm just going to run it. And I kind of put a post out there on some of the GURPS forums basically saying to people that I was going to learn the game as a GM, and also what players who, you know, potentially were new or were quite open to new players and a new GM. And that worked really well, I think, because I got people online to play who actually were quite friendly and quite kind of, you know, noob kind of... open, should I say, to a new GM anyway. And in the end, I ended up running like two different fantasy campaigns. One was just like a GURPS kind of magic fantasy campaign that was kind of very Warhammer based when we sort of built the world together. The other one we did was Dungeon Fantasy GURPS, and then we also ran a bit of GURPS Deadlands, doing quite a few things with them as well, did a couple of one-shots with different sort of systems as well. And none of that would have happened had I not just decided I was just going to jump in and do it and start worrying about whether I knew all the rules and, you know, whether I could remember all the stuff. And there's lots of stuff I got wrong along the way, but also the players were quite good again as well, also looking stuff up with me and kind of, you know, going with the fact that, you know, we just make a ruling and move on and kind of come back and look at it later. So yeah, just wanted to say that, and also thought I'd call in because, you know, if you're struggling to get call-ins, obviously people are just waiting for me to get involved, just to give your show the stamp of approval that it needs. So hopefully now I've called in, you'll get millions more call-ins. Anyway, take care, enjoy the show, and good luck, and I shall speak to you soon. Hey Weeb, it's Barry here again, and I literally just sent you a message in Discord saying I couldn't remember what I was going to leave as a second message, and I've just remembered D&D 3rd edition, of all things. The end of your podcast was still on in my car, so it just drugged my brain. So boring history a bit first of all, so feel free to cut it out, but basically when 3rd edition first came out at my gaming group, everyone was playing 2e originally, and there was a bunch, most of the GMs there are what we these days call grognards. They weren't really called that back then, but that's what they're called these days, and they didn't want to switch from 2nd edition AD&D, which obviously is the best, to the 3rd edition, which is obviously also the best. So I ended up running the first ever game of that. And I didn't do it at the gaming club, I did it with a small sort of side group that we had running. And I remember reading the rules, and I didn't really feel intimidated by it so much as I just knew there was a lot of fiddly bits in there. And one of the things I did around attacks of opportunity, which I will still call attacks of opportunity, despite what 5th edition might call them, was that I actually ignored it the first time I ran the game. Had a conversation with the group and said, this rule's in there, I don't want to use it because we're doing theatre of the mind and I can't be bothered basically having to factor in. So any abilities that, you know, like feats and stuff that use it, avoid those, etc. And had an and we did that. And then after playing that sort of round, we went from 3rd edition to 3.5. And it's after running that one, like I said, in the future I did use them and use them quite effectively, and they weren't really an issue, to be honest. But I think it was taking that cognitive load off me by not using them the first time was quite useful. Now, what's interesting about that is I look back at this now in my older state and think I find it harder these days to do that than I did it at the time. And I don't know, to be fair to myself, whether that's because I'm less confident as a GM or I'm older or more anxious or whatever, or actually just because when I ran a 3rd edition, I knew that nobody else there knew it or was necessarily massively inclined to learn it, so I could take out whatever rules I wanted and no one really cared, which was quite interesting. But we had a blast playing 3rd edition, and 3rd edition is probably the system that I run the longest campaign wise. I've run at least 2 like multi-year campaigns using 3rd edition and had a lot of fun with it, mostly 3.5 I should say rather than 3rd edition. I still don't know if it's my favourite, I still don't know if 2nd edition, there's kind of a bit of a competition in my heart because I played them both at a similar age. 4th edition, don't even want to talk about it, but anyway, so again it goes back to this thing about although the rules were complex, I just didn't use the ones I didn't want to use, and part of me really wants to capture it. I guess from the point of view of coming back at it now is that if I say to a bunch of people, if I go online for a group and say, hey, let's play 3rd edition, and I get a bunch of 3rd edition players, they are often quite anally obsessive over the rules, should we say. I think as systems have evolved and people have kind of gone the separate ways, the people who stay behind to play 3.5 are very into 3.5, and we have that same situation we have with some GURPS players, which I kind of alluded to when I was talking about how I did the other GURPS game, where they want to play all these rules and get really into the nitty gritty. And if you as a DM say, I don't really want to use this rule, I'm not really a big fan of it and stuff, that can cause a bit of ill feeling, should we say, with some of the players. Because I really, really, what I'd love to do, and I've thought about this several times, is run like a stripped down 3rd edition and kind of bring it back down. There is a 3.5 light out there, for example, that you could use, which takes out a lot of the feats and stuff and things, and part we'd like to do and just kind of run it at its core and kind of really strip it down, and I feel that would work really well. But anyway, tangent, but I just wanted to say, yeah, you know, I've had a lot of fun with 3.5, and I think there was something about, again, throwing myself into that one. As a side note, first game I ever ran as a GM, as I've told Jason this before, was actually Rollmaster. And again, probably didn't know what I was doing with Rollmaster the first time I ran it, but nobody who was playing with me cared. So we just did a lot of stuff on the fly, and I think there's a lot to be said about throwing yourself into a system and doing that. So yeah, anyway, that's all I wanted to say in that little reminder of me. Things actually a longer message than the first one. But anyway, feel free to add this to the call, and feel free not to. It's up to you. I just thought I'd share it with you anyway, just so you know I'm listening and it's sparking thoughts in my brain. Anyway, take care. Speak to you soon. Bye. Hey Jason, it's Barry here again. Just to warn you, I've been about millions of notes on your episode, so apologise if this becomes a very long call-in. First thing I wanted to say is your dad's joke. I'm going to absolutely steal that joke. That was that made me laugh on the way into work on a Wednesday morning. That made me chuckle, so I'm going to definitely be pinching that one. Yeah, I don't know if I tell it to my 8-year-old kid though, because yeah, if they repeated that, people might say something, especially in this country, everyone's a bit prudish about stuff, you know what I mean? It's that whole, you know, highly irregular stiff upper lip and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I probably won't be telling that to me. Things I wanted to say was 15-year-old you playing that game, I think you should give 15-year-old you a bit of a break there around to getting emotional about it. I mean, you're 15, that's kind of what being a teenager is about, right? It's about having all those highly charged emotions. It's about feeling more than other people feel in those kind of situations. So, you know, and I remember gaming at that age, and I was always a bit the opposite. I think I was very, like, overly controlled in my emotions. My wife tells me I don't have any, you know, that kind of thing. But I remember a lot of other people getting very, very emotional, very, very connected to events, and very, you know, upset when things didn't go their way and stuff. So, you know, it's kind of, it's fairly common, I think, especially people of those age group, to kind of go through those things. So I think, you know, as I said, 15-year-old you, that's what you're going through at the time, that's what life's like then. Those things do become quite emotionally charged. So I think, remember, reflect back at it in that kind of context. I think I also want to say that I tend to agree, I think, around character death. So I've had characters die in games, and it has upset me. And I think it's important, and I think it's important when I run games as well, for players to feel that there's a risk to their characters and that the characters might die, and also that that means something, because I think it adds an element of, to me anyway, realism to running that game. I remember, even not that long ago, playing an OSC game and also playing in a 5e game that John Allen Large was running at a convention, and I was playing this Weedy Wizard. So he was running a 5th edition Barrow Maze game, but he was doing it on hardcore mode, where basically if you drop to 0 hit points, that's it, you're just dead. And so I had something like 3 hit points, something ridiculous, and we were attacked by these crocodiles essentially, and they were like massacring half the party, and I had to make a decision as a Weedy Wizard as to whether I was going to run down to the riverbank and hit one of these crocodiles on the staff. And I remember feeling anxiety around the fact that I might die. Like, I mean, this is a game where I could just roll a character in 5 minutes and start again, but you know, I'm in the mode of the character at that time, thinking I don't want to get eaten by a crocodile. I'm just this weedy guy, you know, I've got no spells at the moment and stuff. I'm going to get murdered by this thing if it attacks me. And in the end, I actually made the decision to still attack it and did the heroic thing. And I guess that's kind of, you know, the way it goes in those games, that, you know, you got to make those heroic choices even though you might put yourself at risk. But actually, I was really worried about dying, and it would have really upset me had he died in that situation. And so I think that's kind of important. And you know, I think it's good to feel that, as long as you don't go with these horror stories about people getting, you know, very emotionally upset around their character death and all that kind of stuff. But I think most of those are, you know, they're fake stories, really, aren't they, from back in the Satanic Panic days. The Ravenloft story made me chuckle a bit, so I apologise, I was laughing at you for doing that to those things. Maybe I'm just an antagonistic GM, but, you know, I think I have laughed at players in those situations in the past, but only, I think, and this goes back to one of your later points we'll get to around, when I could read the room and they were laughing themselves to death because they'd done it and massacred half the party. Interesting story connected to that. I used to run games, my eldest son used to play with us, and I think what turned him off one time is I was running, again, a pre-written module, and in this chest was about 3 traps layered on top of each other, and he kept setting off the traps, and I think that really irritated the heck out of him. And I think that's one of the things where, actually, especially you're playing with children and sort of like the younger players, you've got to consider that if they feel like the whole world is against them, it will put them off playing it potentially. I mean, they do like it when, you know, things are interesting and they are dangerous, but I think if they feel like the whole thing is just this way to try and kill them, it doesn't work, you know, for some people. And I think we do have to be kind of aware of that. Last few things I wanted to say is thank you about that conversation around safety tools. I feel like, I mean, I'm going to speak for myself, but what it turns out, we're pretty much the same age, that, you know, I feel a bit on a cusp between 2 generations here, because there are people older than me in the hobby, not everyone, but in general, who, when you mention safety tools, are really cynical about it, and they're really like, oh, who needs those, blah, blah, blah. And I get that a bit, but I'm also on the cusp of thinking, well, actually, I can understand the use. And again, I think because of where I work, I mean, I work in healthcare as well, I work in mental health as well, of all things. So, you know, there is a lot of this trauma that people have that we don't know about. And I hear a lot of people saying, well, we don't need safety tools because these are all my friends and, you know, we understand each other. And I think, yeah, but do you really? Because, again, coming at it where I come at it from, men especially are really bad at telling you about the stuff they've been through in their life, and they won't always tell you, they won't admit to it, because there's a lot of pressure on them and a lot of, like, this, you know, whole, like, you know, macho male bravado thing where they won't tell you about stuff. And, you know, even if you give them safety tools, they still might not do it. But I feel like, you know, if we're adult about it, like seriously adult about it, is it really a big deal for us to put safety tools in a game, even if, you know, and people might never use them, but we have them there? And if that saves one person even one time avoiding that trauma for themselves, it's worth it, really, isn't it, at the end of the day? You know, let's be honest about it. It's not good, you know, no one's going to not play your game because you've got an X card on the table. If they have, then do you want to be playing with that person? Do you know what I mean? It's one of those questions, you know, that puts someone off, then is that the kind of person you want to associate with? And that's a personal question. That's not, you know, directing at you necessarily, but that's, I think, something we have to ask ourselves. And communication is key. I mean, again, I work in healthcare, so maybe I come at it from that bias, but, you know, my wife, again, tells me I'm a rubbish communicator, so I'll take that as it will. But yeah, I think it's important, and you're right about, it's what I struggle with online games as well, because that, I mean, I think it's 10% of communication is what people say, and 90% is everything else. And that's not just body language, that's like tone and stuff. So if you can hear them, you get some of the tone, you get some of the intonation in it. It's why text messages and, you know, WhatsApp and Discord can be awful around that kind of stuff, because you don't get any of the intonation. But online games, you lose a lot of that nonverbal, and yeah, it definitely makes me feel less connected to the players, and it's harder to read the table. And I think that's why I introduced a lot more of the safety tools in my sense when I did it, because I felt like I'm not going to pick up when someone feels uncomfortable, so I need them to have some way of telling me that, especially if it's a way they can privately message me and say, I'm not happy with this, I don't like this kind of where it's going, and then I can do something about reversing that. So yeah, I think it's about every time we do something, thinking about what worked well and what didn't. And it's also about giving players that feedback about saying, well, actually, what worked for you in this session and what didn't. And, you know, it's about kind of opening those levels of communication. And there's always that saying about, you know, I can't remember where it comes from, but it's like, you've got two ears and one mouth, so you should be listening twice as much as you speak. And, you know, as we're GMing games, it's a bit difficult because, you know, we do have to do a lot of talking, but we still have to give that space for players to have their say. I mean, I do like, as a general rule with gaming, that I set the scene up and I let them all talk for a bit. And it's a chance to try and listen to what they're saying and get a sense of what they're thinking. And then kind of, you know, occasionally kind of directing them or keeping them on point. And it's things like, you know, if they've misunderstood something, I will sometimes chip in to correct them just so they're not talking about something that's inaccurate, you know, if it's something the characters would know, if that makes sense. But anyway, yeah, I've gone on for about 7 minutes now, so stop talking. Anyway, enjoying your episodes, as you can tell by the fact I'm rambling on about it for almost 10 minutes. So keep them up and take care, and I shall speak to you soon.
Well, there you go. I guess I don't need to do a podcast. I'm just kidding. Barry, thank you so much for your call. That was fantastic. You hit a lot of stuff in this. I don't even know if I can like untangle everything. You know, when it comes to the safety tool situation, I feel you, man. I feel like I'm on the same wavelength. There's part of me that, you know, like I said, I twinged a little bit, like, I don't need safety tools. But then on the other hand, it's like I had that situation, right? So maybe I do need safety tools. And, you know, does it really hurt to just have a conversation with your players and just say, hey, guys, like, you know, if you're feeling uncomfortable about something, then let's talk about it, right? Or at least let's just say, hey, we're not going to talk about this. And I think, you know, like in a lot of situations, you know, we talk about things like lines and veils, which is something that Sly Flourish likes to talk about. You know, this concept of these are things that we're just not going to, subjects that we're not going to cover, period. You know, and then there's other things where we're going to kind of, you know, the veil where we're going to allude that these things are happening, but we're also not going to discuss them or go into detail about them. You know, as far as it goes with the stuff that you were talking about, learning a game and stuff like that, that's actually part of what I want to talk about today. So thanks for your input on that. And I often think about third edition and a light version of 3.5. I've never actually gone out and done it myself, but there is definitely this, I feel like it's a nostalgia. I feel like if I went back and ran straight up third edition D&D or 3.5, I don't know if I necessarily would be like, oh my God, I'm reliving my glory days. I feel like I've kind of moved beyond that, for better or worse, but it definitely influences a lot about how I think and feel about gaming. Thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it, and I'm glad that I can inspire you to share so much, because, you know, sometimes you do this and you're like, hey, does anybody really give a crap about the stuff that I'm saying? Does it really have any value? And so, yeah, I feel validated. I just want to thank everybody for my call, I'd like to thank everybody for calling in. Kyle, Che, and Barry, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much. And make sure you guys check out their shows and give them a little bit of love. Tell them that the Dungeon Plunger sent you. All right. Now I would like to move on to the main show. Taking it to the next level. Taking it to the next level. That's today's topic. The inspiration for this topic comes from one of my players in my youth group who is an aspiring game master. And after listening to the podcast, I was asking him, hey, how do you find this show? Do you feel like it's something that works for you? You know, what would you like to hear about? And he asked me, how would you go about learning how to play a more complicated game? Right now we play Shadow Dark, and he's wondering, how can I learn how to play a fifth edition inspired game? Essentially, that came out of me having a box of RPG books that I was planning on getting rid of called Fate Forged, which are very beautiful books. I just have so much stuff, and I don't ever see myself using this, and I would much rather it go to a good home. So I gave him the books and he was looking through them and he was inspired, like many of us are when we see something and our imaginations go wild and we're like, I want to do this. And then we hit that wall of, holy crap, this is scary. The question is, how do you get to that next level? And I think that when I think back to where I learned how to play the game, began with playing under a game master. We started with second edition. I needed to make a character for a new game, and I had bought this revised second edition book. It was beautiful. As Barry said earlier, bugger it, I'm going to learn it. I sat down, I cracked the book open, I had a fresh photocopied because back in the day we didn't have printers to print this stuff off, so I had a fresh photocopy of the back of the book character sheet and a sharpened pencil, and I sat down and I basically had to flip back and forth between the book, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how does all this work? And of course I had my little dice and everything, and it was a little bit of a struggle. Obviously today, we live in the day of the internet. Things are a little bit different. But before I get into like learning a new, more complex system, whatever that might be, whatever game that might be, there was a few things that I felt were important to mention. First of all, I think the biggest reason why this player wants to play Fate Forged is not so much because of the rules, but because of the setting. And so the first question I would ask is, does the setting actually require these rules to be played? The other question is why exactly do you want more complex rules? Do you want the complicated rules because they add something to the game that is going to bring more joy to you? Or are you just adding complexity for complexity's sake? The other thing that you need to distinguish is that rules don't equal a good story. I feel like players will remember a good time that they had at the table, but they're not necessarily going to remember the good rules. Those aren't the stories. Those aren't the conversations that you're necessarily going to be having. So I think that there needs to be a big distinction made between rules and setting. On the other hand, we need to take into account that on some level, there's a similar sort of, it's almost as if settings and rules are like two sides of the same coin. What do I mean by that? When it comes to rules, we need to learn the rules to make the game work, obviously. But setting can be just as convoluted and complex depending on what the setting is. For example, RuneQuest has a very developed history and setting associated with it. Forgotten Realms from Dungeons & Dragons has a very long storied history through novels and published books. But if you compare that to something like Greyhawk, for example, which still has quite a bit of history and whatnot, but it is so much smaller than, let's say, what's available for Forgotten Realms. That being said, assuming that the complexity of the rules is something that you want, and that, you know, you feel is good for you and your group, then you just got to have the confidence in yourself and say, okay, I'm going to learn this. Giving yourself permission to do this, I think, is important. So many times we make up reasons about why not to do things. So yes, first, give yourself permission, have confidence. The second thing I would say is that YouTube is your friend. In this day and age, we can go online, we can look up videos, you know, literally have somebody explain the rules to us. That is a huge boon over back in the day. Hey, guess what? You can also get your character sheets printed out. And sometimes you can even have them right on your phone if that's what your bag is. The next thing that I would say is having someone teach you the game. So having somebody who's a veteran game master of the system that you want to learn how to play is probably one of the better ways to learn, because then you have that person there at the table and you can ask them questions and say, hey, why did you make the decisions that you made? Why do you do this? Why do you do that? It's not necessarily that their reasons might be better than, you know, what you're capable of doing, but at least you have an understanding about what the motivations for making the decisions that they did at the time were. And you can say, hey, that's a great idea. or you could say, hey, that's, I don't like that. The next thing that I would do is I would take the book, skim through it, read the rules, and familiarize yourself with them. I don't think that you need to go major into depth, but I think you should have a good idea just by looking at the table of contents, just seeing, like, you know, the organization of the book, seeing, like, how do we make a character? What is the, how does combat work? If there's magic, how does that work? If there's, like, rules for chases or whatever, those things aren't as important. But the underpinning of the game is, what is the core mechanic and how do you make characters? And so those are probably the two things that you want to focus on. Once you've done that, I would probably go about learning how to build a character on your own. You can use a tutorial, as I said, on YouTube, or just kind of sit with the book and try to figure it out. Once you've done that, I would probably run a mini combat by myself, or maybe with a friend. If you're trying to figure out how to make characters with a friend, you can bounce off ideas, and then maybe you just, you know, have a little fight with, you know, either working together or against each other, have a couple of monsters slapped down on the table, and just sort of duke it out and go, oh, okay, so this is how we hit, this is how we deal damage, this is how we heal, standard kind of questions that are going to come up frequently in a game. One of the other things that Barry said that I think is really important is that you don't need to know all of the rules. Sometimes you need to be able to make a ruling and move on. Focus on pushing the game forward, just figuring out what the rule is later. The thing that Barry said that I thought was really good is that you should cut out the rules that you're not comfortable with. You can just say flat out, hey, this is in the book. I'm not really sure how it works. I'm not comfortable with it yet, and just don't use it. And sometimes by not having those things, you will actually see why they were important to have them in the game. Sometimes you might see, hey, well, this worked really weird. And then you'd be like, oh, okay, now I understand why that specific rule was put in the game. It was meant to balance this or to take consideration of this specific thing that could occur. Lastly, I would say it's okay to make mistakes. You don't need to know all the rules by heart. And, you know, you will make mistakes. And that's okay. And you shouldn't beat yourself up over that. At the same time, you should be recruiting your players to help you out. When you make characters together with your players, the onus should be on them, that they should sort of figure out, okay, how does my character work? What are these abilities? And sort of be ready to, like, tell you how they work. And then you guys can have a little dialogue and go, oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. And then move on. I would say also that as you're going through the rule book, you know, you can make yourself a little cheat sheet of, you know, the important things that you're going to need during the game. Typically, combat is important, healing, skill checks, saving throws, and eventually, you know, magic and stuff like that will be important. Lastly, even though I've already said this, you just need to chill. And you need to have fun. Ultimately, your players are rooting for you. They're there because they want to have fun. And really, they're not there to criticize you or make fun of you. And if they do bring up stuff, it's generally because they're trying to help. I don't think I remember a single game in which the rules themselves made the game a better experience. And so I think ultimately, what's important is running the game and doing whatever you need to keep it going. As you gain more experience, have a better grasp of how the rules work and how to implement them. That's all I have for this week, folks, but let me ask you, the listeners, a question. What advice would you have for someone wanting to learn how to play a more complicated game system? I just wanted to say thank you very much for everybody who called in. I want to say thank you for listening. And remember, please rate and review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Make sure you slam a like and a comment onto the YouTubes. Music is by Alexander Kizunaku. Cover art by the most excellent John McNally from the Pacific Northwest. You can call in and leave a message, which I hope you do, at speakpipe.com/thedungeonplunger. Or send an email at thedungeonplunger@gmail.com. That's all one word, Dungeon Plunger. And remember, when you're plunging into the dungeon and nature calls, watch out for mimics disguised as toilets. They're a real pain in the butt. Elbows up!